protect your boats and recreational vehicles with FBP RV and Marine antifreeze. It has burst-proof protection down to negative 50 degrees, keeping you protected against freezing temperatures. Keep your winter worry-free with FBP ready-to-use RV and Marine antifreeze now at Menards. Visit us in-store or on Menards.com and shop our great selection of automotive products. Save big money
at Menards. When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Kevin Walsh here, the Kevin Walsh Show, a Sports Grid podcast. What a weekend. What a weekend it is going to be in the sports world, and it is why I'm kind of doing this all together. It is also because I am away this weekend. Don't think for a second I won't have my eye on all the happenings, but I am headed off to Eagles Bucks in Tampa Bay with the fiance. She is a Bucks fan. If by chance you're listening to this and you don't know, obviously I am an Eagle fan. So we felt like we couldn't miss this opportunity with them playing together in Tampa Bay. And we're making the most of it. With that said, how do we set you up here on the podcast for success this weekend? We always do our college card here on the show. We will do that again. I'm going to go through the NFL slate as well. There's some sides that stood out. We'll talk through that all as well, and I'm really excited to get into it. We'll do the college before the NFL, but before we do any of that, I just wanted to do a couple of quick hitters off the top because, again, this is such a huge weekend of sports. You could argue it starts tonight with Thursday night football, the Seahawks and the Cardinals. I won't be long on this because, you know, this will be a little outdated, obviously, but, you know, if some of you listen this Friday or Saturday, or even if you listen Sunday morning, Marvin Harrison Jr., over 45 and a half receiving yards. I am going back to Marvin Harrison Jr., the supposed to be number one wide receiver in a draft class loaded with talent, has not lived up to the billing. But this number is way too low. This is a number last week that he almost cleared, finishing with three catches for 44 yards. Why didn't he clear it? Right? Over 50-plus yards and drops. Do we think he's going to just have the drops for the rest of his career? I don't. I don't at all. I think this is a great spot to back Marvin Harrison Jr., and I'm going to do that against the Seattle Seahawks here. So give me Marv on a Thursday night. The Ryder Cup. Now listen, I'll follow the golf, I'll bet the golf, right? I'm not going to, you know, tell you that this is my number one event of the weekend, but I don't want to poo-poo the golf either, especially because they're flipping odds boosts out there, left, right, and center. I use them all on the U.S. to lift the trophy or to win, whichever you get. They're the exact same for the U.S. For Europe, it's a little bit different. If it ends in a straight tie, then Europe lifts the trophy. So you're betting U.S. to win, and... Again, like you, this is a bit of a Neanderthal breakdown. Scottie Scheffler's on the U.S., right? Last we checked, cool. Give me Scottie. Add Bryson in as well. I think you could make an argument the two best golfers in the world are Bryson DeChambeau and Scottie Scheffler. And they're playing on Long Island, in New York, in the U.S. I know they're the favorites. You slap these boosts on them, and we're going to back the home country at home in the Ryder Cup. Last one. Before we get to the college card, Major League Baseball is coming down the stretch, adding to the incredible weekend are the final series of the Major League Baseball season. At the time of the recording, you have the Tigers collapse, who at the moment find themselves, you know, a game back of Cleveland and could very well miss the playoffs. You have the Yankees and the Blue Jays tied at 90 and 68 apiece. The Astros have completely fallen apart. The NL wildcard race with the Mets, Reds, D-backs trying to stay in the fold as well. I mean, it is incredible how much is up for grabs. And then you have the big award up for grabs. And this is the hot debate now, Cal Raleigh versus Aaron Judge. And, you know, it is a debate, but I think we need to be honest about what we are debating, okay? Because some of this isn't, look, there's a lot of fandom reaching into this, okay? Right? Whether that be Yankee fans, Mariner fans, or people that hate the New York Yankees, and obviously there's plenty of them. But Aaron Judge, and here's what I'm not going to tell you right off the bat what I think about who should win. We need to be understand the case, okay? Aaron Judge's case is very clean. He's been the best player in baseball all season. The wins above replacement will tell you that. There is nobody in the same stratosphere as Aaron Judge when it comes to war. People at work, they laugh, they say, I'm a war merchant. Yes, I am. I am a merchant for the stat that captures all of your value compared to everybody else in the sport. And Aaron Judge's is at a 9.3. Second in the American League is Cal Raleigh at 7.2. And then it is J-Rod who's done this incredible second-half surge again up to a 6.8. For reference, Shohei Ohtani is a 7.5. Shout-out to Paul Skeens at a 7.6 and Chris Sanchez, actually, of the Phils at a 7.7. Sometimes I've done the research on this recent 10 years or so. Offensive war, little more telling. Again, Judge clean of everybody else in baseball at a 9 flat. Cal Raleigh is second at a 7.8. Shout out Juan Soto at a 7.1. But, you know, it gives you the gap between Judge and Raleigh in offensive war is the gap between Cal Raleigh and Bobby Witt in offensive war. Bobby Witt's obviously a great player. Bobby Witt's not in this race. We're having this race, right? Aaron Judge with 51 home runs, 109 RBI at the time of this conversation. And again, just under a .330 batting average, the best OPS. He's the best player in baseball. So the Cal Raleigh case, okay, it's not home runs matter more than batting average. What? What? Huh? What are you talking about? Okay, that's crazy. It really shouldn't be. Mariners are going to win their division. Okay, CJ Stroud won the AFC South for a couple of years. Like, that didn't help him get into any MVP races. Let's, okay, right? Yeah, again, Yanks at the time of talking here, better record than the Mariners. So let's not be bizarre about this. Let's try and not be bizarre about this. The Cal Raleigh case is he plays catcher. It's probably, again, the batting average of his all is a little weird. It's one of the best hitter seasons of all time. Again, I mentioned the 7-8 for Cal Raleigh, again, at the time for offensive war. A 7.7 for Joe Mauer the season he won MVP. So it's one of the best catcher hitters. Joe Mauer batted .365 that year. What a monster. Led baseball, or led at least the American League, in batting average, on base, slugging, OPS, OPS. You know, all the things Judge is doing. Anyway. But the idea is, the conversation we're having is because Cal Raleigh plays catcher, and because the production from this position so rarely looks like this, does that make him more valuable? That's the question. Cal is not having a better season. He's obviously not the better player. If you actually sat down the Mariners and said, hey, would you rather Cal or Judge? They'd pick Judge. You know all of that. I know I sound condescending, and maybe I am because I've heard some silly things, but Don't be silly, man. People are like, I don't understand how this is a debate. What? Like, the people who are saying that on the Cal Raleigh side are way out to lunch. Because the Cal Raleigh debate is about positional value. But here's where, and for me right now, and we'll see where the dust settles over the final couple of days of the baseball season. The NFL MVP award is a quarterback award because of positional value. Because there's no position that impacts winning more than the quarterback. And it is so demanding, and we understand that. The situation of catcher positional value here for Cal Raleigh is not that catcher is the most important position in the sport. It's that there's a lot of bad catchers. It's that when you rank the seasons you've seen from catchers this year, it goes Cal Raleigh, and then like Will Smith, and then probably William Contreras, and then, I don't know, like Salvi, Langoliers. Like, that's what you're dealing with, right? And those gaps create that gap for Cal is the case. Where I struggle to be fully sold by that is it's not that playing catcher is massively more important. It's that most of the catchers are bad. It's kind of like tight ends, right? It would be like, let's say, I know Brock Bowers off to a slow start, right? But let's say Brock Bowers lived up to his billing and had himself a really, really nice year, okay? Even last year, Brock Bowers actually had an incredible season. He didn't even win Offensive Rookie of the Year because we didn't do the thing of like, oh, but he's a tight end and no tight ends are good, so it's got to be Brock Bowers. Because he'd be like, well, no, like we're talking about importance and value, and you don't just win it because most teams don't have great catchers. You don't win MVP just because Austin Wells is up and down, right? You don't win MVP because we don't know if we can rely on Francisco Alvarez, right? You don't win MVP just because Hunter Goodman of the Colorado Rockies is actually one of the five best guys at the position this year or thereabouts. And therefore that, like, no, you don't. So that's where it loses me a little. Again, plus Judge absolutely lapping the field and I'm the entire field when it comes to just the numbers and what they are. But just be honest about what the conversation is. Judge is better. He's been better. But maybe because Cal Raleigh is so much better than the rest of the catchers, it's a different conversation. Great, great, great stretch of the baseball season is still coming up, and we're excited to watch that. But we're excited for one of the best weekends of the college football season. Four big games. We don't need a podcast break. We'll take one between the college and the NFL. Let's be real. It's kind of tiered out, right? There are two top games. Penn State, Oregon, Georgia, Alabama. Those are the two top games that everybody's going to be in the mix on at the same time. Get yourself, double TVs, bar, whatever it is. You got to be in the mix. 7:30, Georgia, Bama, Penn State, Oregon. Then you work into the ranked USC, Illinois, ranked Ole Miss, LSU, involved in both of those games as well. But it doesn't stop there, right? You've got a lot of juice with Notre Dame going to Arkansas. Spread well under a touchdown. Washington hosting number one Ohio State. Money will not stop pouring in on the Huskies. That line from 10.5 down to 7.5 in some spots. Texas A&M, right? The upset of Notre Dame, a bye week, now hosts the Auburn Tigers. Auburn, right, with a lot of dreams and aspirations, just suffered a loss to OU last week. Iowa, can they stun Indiana, who just had their biggest win as a program against Illinois last week, 63-10? And then there's some under-the-radar stuff. Miss State, Tennessee, Iowa State, Arizona, late-night Colorado, BYU. It's loaded with great, great college football. But there were four games where you've got ranked, and I'm like, we got to be involved in those four at minimum. Right, that's what we do here on the podcast. The games that you're all betting, I'm going to bet. And I make it sound like, I wouldn't do that if it wasn't for you. Yeah, right, like I wouldn't be in the mix. Let's just do chronological order. And we begin with Illinois USC. And this is a bit of a gift spot, I think, here. USC is off to an excellent start to their season. The offense looks right now like Lincoln Riley's ready to do it again. What do I mean? I mean Jaden Maiava Heisman Trophy talk. I mean Jaden Maiava first overall pick talk. You might think, no way on the ladder. If Maiava wins the Heisman, there's going to be a conversation. In order for Maiava to win the Heisman, though, USC is going to have to avoid an upset here against Illinois. And this is where I say we got ourselves a bit of a gift. Last week, in a down week side-wise, no doubt, for myself. One that came in, or was it 2 weeks ago? It all starts to blend together, doesn't it? 2 weeks ago, excuse me. Purdue USC. Back the Boilermakers. Luck box cover. Not going to pretend it wasn't. The outrageous, you know, they ran a trick play that basically should have been a pick six, and then somehow it was a scoop and score for Purdue while they were on offense, okay? It was totally, totally bizarre. But it worked out, okay? It worked out, and it got them the cover, which means USC has still not covered a spread on the road against a real Big Ten team. I don't care about USC covering numbers, okay, against, you know, a UCLA or who they play last year. Yeah, they went to UCLA and got it covered. That doesn't count, okay? I'm talking about Michigan, lost. Minnesota, lost. Maryland, lost. Purdue was the first time they actually won one of these games. So I was always going to want to back Illinois here. But I wouldn't want to back Illinois at a short number. Would have had to if they upset Indiana. I wouldn't have probably been pumped to back them at even, you know, a plus three if they lost close. Because, like, can I get the hook? Instead, Illinois gets floored, gets their heads beat in. And what do you know? We get the Illini plus seven, an absolute must. Now, listen, as I talk to you, there's only one plus seven out there. Another could pop, figure it out. We want the touchdown, though. We want the touchdown. We want to be safe. With that said, I do think Illinois is incredibly live in this game. For Brett Bielema and the boys, you were just embarrassed. And you now can come home and right the ship. For Illinois, are their college football playoff hopes over? Are they over? Not necessarily. They host USC, then go to Purdue, and then host Ohio State. If they can beat USC and beat Ohio State, they're obviously right back where they need to be. And in fact, I'll go a step further. If they hang with USC and beat Ohio State, they're going to have life to get in. Because the rest of the schedule, they'll be decent favorites. I think. Because I think if they beat Ohio State, they'd be favored at Washington. But they're on a bye at least before the game. Illinois, with all of their returning production, senior veteran leadership, embarrassed by Indiana. We're getting a touchdown now with a team coming to Illinois who's already complaining about the early kick. We've already heard Lincoln Riley be like, yeah, don't love Big Noon kick. Well, that's what these teams signed up for, right? I mean, heck, Utah, Texas Tech last week was the Big 12 Big Noon kickoff. That's a 10 a.m. local. I mean, look, it's a little ridiculous. I understand they want big games and they should want big games, right? And thank goodness Big Noon kickoff is not Penn State, Oregon, and we get a night game there, you know, but that's the set. Look, for Illinois, another edge their way. This couldn't have worked better. We're getting a touchdown at home, noon kick. I'm backing the Illini and Luke Altmyer to step up and potentially stun USC. We move on. Ole Miss LSU. Ranked the 4th-ranked LSU Tigers, the 13th-ranked Ole Miss Rebs. My question to you, who has the best win between these two teams? Who has the best win? Because, look, maybe LSU ruined Clemson's season, right? And, you know, Antonio Williams gets injured and it just rocked them to their core. But Clemson's a mess. Clemson lost 17-10 to LSU week one at home. They lost last week to Syracuse 34-21. It's a disaster for Clemson. So we got to remember that when we're trying to evaluate this LSU team who's ranked 4th. For Ole Miss, they have maybe the best quarterback room in college football. Austin Simmons had legit Heisman hype entering the year. You know, if you listen to the preseason podcast, you guys know I like Austin Simmons. It's why I have an Ole Miss national championship futures ticket. Now, I don't think Ole Miss has looked... Ole Miss has not looked like obvious, oh, they're the best team in college football. But offensively, they look as good as always. Because Austin Simmons got injured, and Trinidad Chambliss is a beast. In his last two starts against Arkansas and Tulane, averaging over 400 yards of total offense, and has given this team 5 total touchdowns, Trinidad Chambliss is a handful, and unknown, really, transferred in from like the D2, D3 level, and has absolutely looked the part. Has looked better, to be very clear, than Garrett Nussmeier. Like, Nuss has looked like a pro at times, but this LSU operation offensively has not looked dominant. It just hasn't. And that's something that I was trying to then figure out from a value end of it, right? Is this a player prop game? So you could potentially argue Nussmeier under passing yards. You could argue Kawan Lacy, the Ole Miss running back, under rushing yards. But the more I looked at this, Brian Kelly has only beaten one ranked SEC team on the road, and it was a pretty fortunate win against Mizzou. It was the Jaden Daniels Heisman season. And again, think about that. The Jaden Daniels Heisman season. They lost every single good team that they were supposed to, okay? That game was 22-7 Mizzou. And they had a great comeback LSU. It was 39-35 with 5 minutes to go. But a pick six with under a minute left got LSU a 10-point win. They were going to win the game with the pick six, of course, with the interception, I should say. The six got them the cover. I'm going to back Ole Miss here. This is a team that I bet to win the national title. I picked to win this spot. Their money line between, you know, let's get the most updated numbers as I'm sitting here. You'll probably see them at a little bit different. Let's see. I was at minus 118. I think maybe it flipped up to like minus 120. I don't want to deal with the conversion stuff. Yeah, minus 120 in a couple of spots there. You want to lay the 1.5. You want to lay 1. That's fine. I did money line. I'm on Ole Miss. I'm on Ole Miss. And I'll just say, Trinidad Chambliss, I have not re-entered the Heisman market. But Trinidad Chambliss is one to watch. Some books aren't even posting him. One book dropped him from 50 to 33 just because he seemingly has won the job, if you will, away from Austin Simmons. And that was enough for the books to, you know, shoot that number in that direction, which I agree with. I'm backing Chambliss on the field in this game. Give me Ole Miss money line. Penn State, Oregon. Oh, yeah. Fantastic. Now, for me, this game... It is the first time all season I think I feel okay about not betting Oregon to win the national championship. To give, just in case maybe your first time listening, right, you don't listen to every episode, all good, that's fine, okay? But do you know, subscribe, you know, make sure you're downloading, all right, get in the mix here. I was between Oregon and Clemson. Obviously a disaster of a decision, okay? Obviously. And if I could have it back, I would tenfold. But I think this game is a reminder. Obviously, I was wrong about Clemson. But I think in my heart of hearts, despite liking Dante Moore, which I do, and thinking that Oregon presented legit value, which, by the way, they did. Their number has been cut in half, okay? This spot on the road against Penn State, I'm not backing them. And there's going to be a lot of people backing the Ducks here. Because James Franklin, it's been real simple. You see, playing a team as good, if not better, bet against them. Loses every single time. I think Penn State is the side. I feel I found a better way to bet that side, though. I've tried not to get too cute with this stuff throughout the season. You guys know, right? We're a lot of sides this year, both college and pro football. But the team total for Oregon, 24.5, give me the under. Little pricey. I saw minus 127. I saw minus 130. I will just say, you know, obviously it all depends how much you're looking to get down on this, but some of these books are not bad with the profit boosts, okay? You can use that to really shorten your number, right? Like, let's just say one book is giving you, again, it all depends what you want to get down on this, but let's just say they're giving you a $25 max, 50% on this game, okay? Right away, you're grabbing this now at a plus price, plus 114, that if you bet the minus 130 for the amount you want, you're getting this a little bit closer to minus 120, right? Minus 115. And you can start to feel a little bit better about it. By the way, if you don't have profit boost, that's okay. But this total is also ticking up a little, okay? 51.5s are becoming 52.5s. And spread-wise, I think this only moves towards Oregon. I think it's more likely the hook vanishes than we get to like 4 or 4.5, meaning you can maybe sit tight, obviously depending on when you're listening to this, and catch better juice on that under 24.5, because as I looked at it, the 24 can be key. And what do I mean by that is, last four years, there have been 7 games a season that Penn State has hosted. That's 28 games. Only once has a team come in and put up over 24. Shout out C.J. Stroud in his final season in Columbus. What a very, very, very good football team that was. But you know what that football team wasn't? The team that won the national championship. You know who Penn State has now hosted 2 straight years? The eventual national champion. Ohio State last year held them to 20. Michigan the year before that held them to 24. This Penn State defense, we know we can trust. Drew Aller, I don't know. Have you guys seen the Drew Aller QBR? Like, they've played Nevada, FIU, and Villanova. You would think Drew Aller would be sitting here in 3 games, talking about 8 touchdown passes, no picks, 75% completion percentage, right? Nope. Yards per attempt, way down. Only 4 touchdown passes. Has himself an interception. Completion percentage down. Passer rating down. His QBR is 107. College football QBR. I couldn't believe that. He's done no running. Hasn't hit the end zone yet. It's been bizarre. I don't want anything to do with it. I don't want anything to do with it. But I feel wrong saying this as a bit of a Dante Moore guy. Dante Moore, first time at Oregon, real road environment, and it's a Penn State night game whiteout. Yeesh. Yeesh. That's a fade for me. That's a fade for me. I mean, last year's Penn State defense and, you know, this year's Penn State defense has as much hype, if not more, played Oregon in the Big Ten title game. And look, they gave up a gazillion points, don't get me wrong. But the Oregon team total with Dylan Gabriel was like 27.5. You know, we're now talking about neutral, you know, going from neutral site to Penn State, Dylan Gabriel, Dante Moore, this Nittany Lions defense off a bye. Come on. I also think that's one of the bigger edges in this game. I think the fact that Penn State was able to, you know, ready, steady, and schedule the bye, they've clearly put nothing on film with how, you know, the offenses looked. And Oregon just played Oregon State. I understand Oregon State's not very good, but that's still, a rival in state. And they've already had a road Big Ten game against Northwestern. I think there's a Penn State spot, but I think the best way to back it is the under team total 24.5. It's my best bet of the weekend so far. We'll see how the end, but best bet on the college football slate. Last big game best bet, that is Georgia, Alabama. Give me the under 53.5. Little bit of a zag here. This total's climbing in some spots. This 53.5. Actually, the one book that had 53.5 went down to 52.5. It's now flat 53. Maybe it pops back up. I would have still played it. I still would have played it at 52.5, okay? I think this is an under. And this is something that I wasn't able to really, at least I don't think, talk too much about last go-around when Bama was playing Wisconsin. Because, yeah, that was 2 weeks ago. It's like, what a blur. But I ended up not playing that under, and I actually got very fortunate that I didn't play that under. What happened was they came out of the half, and Ryan Williams caught a screen pass, went 75 to the house, and then Wisconsin returned the ensuing kickoff for a touchdown. The game had 52 points. The total was 45.5, and you got 14 points in 30 seconds of the second half. And then everything else obviously was everything else. Like 38 points outside of that with a touchdown in a room. Like, you should have been clean there. It happens. It happens. My point is, why was I looking at that under? Bama's calling card this year is supposed to be the defense. I talk a lot about between Oregon and Clemson. The other team was Bama. And the Bama bets were on the defense. Because Ty Simpson comes with uncertainty, right? We saw that a little bit against FSU, but we saw the defense not step up against FSU. The defense has been great in the two games since. Now, UL Monroe in Wisconsin. But you got to see it. You got to see it. And we saw it. And now, I'm looking at this total again, 53.5, 52.5. This is higher than when Georgia played Tennessee. You're going to say, what, K-Dub? 44-41. That's 85 points. You're right. I got you. 9 points scored in overtime. That game was completely out of control. With 28 first quarter points, 21 of them belonging, 21 of them belonging to Tennessee, right? You know, the fourth quarter popped off a little bit just due to urgency and whatnot, and they were able to hit some big shots again, both teams. But if you're Georgia and you just let Aguiar and Brazel get busy, Aguiar for 371, Chris Brazil for, 177 yards. How are you not making Ty Simpson play in front of you? Ryan Williams, Jeremy Bernard, Horton not beating us deep in front of you. Longer drives, more on the ground. And if you're Bama's defense, kind of a similar story, right? Keep Zachariah Branch in front of you. Make Georgia rely on their ground game. Make Gunnar Stockton keep these reads. And I think you, again, Kirby Smart off a bye. Kalen DeBoer's Alabama team has been very good off a bye. I expect this to be close. I don't expect this to be the shootout like last year. Give me the under at 53.5. Georgia Bama, get the best of your number. I'm seeing a flat 53. We're 52.5. I'd still play it there. I'm going under Georgia Bama. Okay, those are the big game best bets. I'm playing two props and one more side. Okay, let's get to the side, and let me make sure that this is still out there right now, because you guys would be rightfully, oh, it's out there in droves. I'm telling you, it's moving the wrong way. Late night, number 25 BYU goes to Colorado. We're back in Dion in primetime, giving me the +7 with the Buffs. Give me +7 with the Buffs. Colorado, right now, I might have a decent gauge on this team. We're going to find out. Faded them when they went to Houston. Mind you, at like, I think 3.5, 4 was the number in that game. I think, for the record, I think Houston is better than BYU. Okay? So, right away, spread math we'll tell you we've got ourselves an opportunity here, but just on that alone. BYU's laying a touchdown, which is double the, on the road, double the number Houston laid at home, okay? But what was the big reason for that? Ryan Staub was quarterbacking. I wanted to fade Staub. I think Salter's the better QB. Then we have Colorado, Wyoming. I played the over. I thought that was a safer bet, okay? I thought that was a safer bet than playing the side of Colorado, which I nearly did. Well, Colorado, backdoor covered, by the way, due to a 35-yard touchdown run for Caden Salter, 37-20. That game flew. Now, you could say there are some questions on the CU defense, and there are some questions on the CU defense, but I'm backing Caden Salter. I want to bet on Caden Salter. I want to bet on this Colorado team. A touchdown at home, I think, is too much, and you can get that in plenty of places here. So we are on Colorado plus 7. Now, there are two props in two of the biggest games. I would say the two big games I feel like I'm not in, right? Like, relatively. I don't have a bet right now in Arkansas, Notre Dame. I continue to like the Notre Dame running backs, but that almost then made me interested in CJ Carr. I think this is going to be a really fun live betting game. I think that CJ, if you made me bet something, it'd probably be CJ Carr over his passing yards. I'm not going to be betting that football game. I'm also not going to bet Iowa, Indiana. I was going to take the points with Iowa. Iowa's a little fraudulent, though. The offense I still don't trust. They gave up 28 last week to Rutgers. If Cignetti gets the chance, Cignetti gets the chance to run him up a flagpole. He's going to do just that. And he might have a Heisman Trophy winner, right? Fernando Mendoza, all of a sudden, is the Heisman Trophy favorite. This team scored 190 points in their last three games, with Mendoza throwing 14 touchdowns in those games. He's going to give this kid a chance. I don't need to be involved with that spot. Okay, I did find myself involved in both Ohio State, Washington, and A&M, Auburn. Let's start with Ohio State, Washington. This is a fun one, okay? I am way too late to the party on backing UW. If the 10.5s were there, you know, that were there on open, I probably get there as well, okay? But those are gone. Spreads ticked up now. So, like, you know, UW team totals, 20.5s are not 21.5s. Those are gone, right? This is a very fascinating matchup because Ohio State beats Texas in week number one, takes the top spot, defending champs, show them respect. Texas has obviously been a real weird football team since. Arch Manning, is he good? Is he not? Is he confident? Is he not? We await them next week in SEC action. Can't wait to see how that plays out. But I think regardless of how Arch looks in November, right, the worst version of Arch is probably the one that Ohio State played. And then they play Grambling, who cares? And then they're weirdly, like, in a close game late against Ohio, and it's like, huh? Why is that going on? And then you've got Washington. The offense looks outrageous. It's 7th in yards per play, 14th in yards per game. Defense not inspiring a ton of confidence early. So maybe you say, all right, let's just bag it over here. That's the right play. But then I'm struggling with Julian Sain, right? Because Sain has all the confidence in the world thrown against Grambling and late against Ohio, and it's the Jeremiah Smith show. But against Texas, they couldn't move the football. So I'm trying to, you know, narrow this down. What do I want to play? Give me Devin Williams over 210.5 passing yards, okay? Some spots would be 212.5. Look, I think Devin Williams can have himself a really strong game here. He has now started 5 straight games, right? It was a little in and out of the lineup, but he had the last two. One against Oregon, by the way, and then a bowl game against Louisville, and then the first 3 games of this season. He is at, just passing-wise, okay? We are at 8 touchdowns, 1 interception, 270 passing yards per game, completing 77.5% of his passes at 11.3 yards per attempt. I think Ohio State, the way most teams seem to attack this Washington team, the best teams, I should say, they try and slow down Jonah Coleman, their star running back. I think they're going to also want to keep Devin Williams off the ground. I think that they're going to try and get the football out of Devin's hands quickly, because last year, that game against Oregon I mentioned, he got sacked 10 times, okay? They're going to want to get the football out quick, and maybe there's some busted coverages here. If the game gets out of hand, we got garbage time attempts in our favor. I think there's plenty of pathways for Demon Williams to get through this listed number. Checking in right now at 210.5. The other big game, A&M Auburn, SEC action. Now, I wanted to lay this with Texas A&M because I think Texas A&M is better than Oklahoma, right? And this is basically the same number that OU laid. Depending where you bet it, it's a, you know, it's OU covered, OU pushed. The whole thing was obviously a bit of a mess. Here's the thing, though. Auburn was right there in that football game the whole way. And they probably should have covered. And I thought that spread was out of whack. And A&M's been weird because their defense is a bit of a mess. And if Notre Dame just holds on and, you know, whether extra point, a 4th-and-19 miracle touchdown, like, what's this number? So I didn't want to lay that 6.5. This total's up, though, right? And it should be because right now A&M is an over team. And part of that is Marcel Reed looks like a Heisman candidate. And that's been adjusted in some ways, not his passing touchdown number. Marcel Reed has now thrown for 9 touchdowns, okay, in the first 3 games of his season, 2-plus in each. He threw for 2-plus in 3 of his last 4 games last year. So that's 6 of his last 7 we've seen Marcel Reed throw for 2-plus. Auburn this year, all the touchdowns are coming through the air against this team. 6 of 7 touchdowns allowed by Auburn have been passing, minus 112. Over 1.5 passing touchdowns for Marcel Reed with the way the Mario Craver, I mean, I didn't really realize like what he did against Notre Dame was actually more like it was a little outrageous, but it was kind of a continuation. He's got 443 yards and 4 touchdowns through 3 weeks of football. And I don't even think he's the best receiver on the team. I think it's KC Concepcion. So this is a group reduce. Give me Marcel Reed over the 1.5 passing touchdowns against Auburn. Last thing I'll say on college football, and then we're going to shoot over to the NFL. You have 3 football programs that fired their coaches, all in what felt like tempting spots. Va Tech at NC State, you can get 10.5. Baylor's at home against Oklahoma State is at home against Baylor, fired Gundy, you can get 21. And then UCLA's on the road against Northwestern. And that those they were at 7. It's down to 6.5 everywhere. I was like, should I be involved with these? I'm out. My favorite of the bunch would be to back Va Tech 10.5. I'm not playing it. I kind of, you know, Baylor's team totals 38.5. That's not a mistake. They should score a gazillion. They should have their eyes on scoring a gazillion after a, you know, close late loss to Arizona State. UCLA, I don't know, man. I lean UCLA, total's like 44.5. The total's been tricking under. Not playing it. But I'm very interested to see how that finishes up for those programs. How often are you going to get 3 power programs all to fire their head coach in September like this? So I thought those were interesting spots. So just to run through it again. Demon Williams over 210.5 passing yards. Marcel Reed over 1.5 passing touchdowns. Colorado plus 7. Illinois plus 7. Ole Miss money line. Georgia, Alabama under 53.5. Favorite of the bunch, Oregon team total under 24.5. We take a quick podcast break. Come on back here. Let's talk some Week 4 NFL Sunday slate. All right, back in the mix here, getting into this Week 4 Sunday slate. I won't be on Pro Football today on Sports Grid. It's actually the slate on Sunday begins at 9:30 in Dublin with the Steelers and the Vikings. I went through this. There's a couple of spots that stood out. Now, I just want to, you know, a little, I guess, behind the curtains of it all, if you will, right? I mean, it's a Kevin Walsh show. We're obviously always open and honest with the people. So, like, all those college football bets that we went through, those are in. Those are placed. Those are booked. We're locked in. At the time of recording this, I have not placed the NFL wagers yet. It's a little bit of an odd spot for me because I will risk losing bad numbers, losing good numbers on some games and the chance to get a great number. I will not like a game, and then by Sunday, it's like, whoa, this has run too far type of thing. Injury reports are cleaner, obviously, the more you wait. And to some degree, I wouldn't even be doing this. I would just do like a general overview of the slate. But I'm going to Florida for the Eagles-Bucks game. I don't know. I can get involved like Hard Rock Bet down there. I don't know if I want to do that. I don't know yet. I don't know what I'm going to do. So like all of these, everything we're going to go over, okay? Some of these like I'm definitely going to play. Maybe it moves against me, right? We'll talk through it. You got what I'm saying? But I'm not going to act. Here's what I'm saying. I'm not going to tell you like, what? Who told you to bet that? I don't know. No, like if we're going to talk through it, I like it, okay? Otherwise, I wouldn't, you know, be willing to say it. But there may be spots where it's like, hey, I want to wait for the best of this number, or oh, I missed out on it type of thing. I think you guys understand where I'm coming from. Like most of this might be bet tomorrow at the airport where it's like, all right, final numbers in, boom, let's run type of situation. Most of these are pretty settled and consistent across the board. You get what I'm saying. Let's just run through every game. We'll go through most, you know, the ones that I'm not involved with, we'll go through quickly. Like just Steelers-Vikings. I took New England last week. I think they were the right side. They can't stop turning the football over, and they're just not playing good football, which is not what I expected out of Mike Vrabel. When I say good football, they're not playing like smart football, and I expected better than Mike Vrabel from that. Pittsburgh, I don't know. They may just rotate covers on a weekly basis. It's Tomlin supreme, you know, on the road, dog, whatever, you know, slight fave, he handles it. At home, it's like, oh, they're clearly going to win. They lose. No thank you. Let's see if Carson Wentz can continue to cook. Falcons, Commanders, on open, Atlanta was +3. That was interesting to me, but I don't really understand what's going on here because this line's down to 1.5. Is Jaden Daniels playing? Like, I don't get it. Like this line going down would say, oh, they confirm Mariota. It seems like Daniels is going to play. Terry McLaurin, though, might not play. That game's a mess. Michael Penix, by the way, has one passing touchdown. And it was that, like, screen pass to Bijan Robinson that he took, like, 70 yards to the house. He hasn't thrown a touchdown in two straight weeks. Penix has been bad this year. I thought he'd be much better. Not a game I'm involved with. Bills Saints. Now, this is one that I am heavily looking at. It's going to be ugly, but I like under. I'm seeing 48.5. Would love a 49 or 49.5 even. I mean, listen, I don't want to be insane, but if we can get 49, then we could push on a 35-14 just in case that ends the score. The thing is, there's a 148.5, a few 48s, and then a few 47.5s. The numbers come up. It just doesn't look like it's going to run that far. Buffalo is basically always good for 30 at home, and I get that. But this Saints defense is going to have to show a little bit of fight. Some of it wasn't their fault against Seattle. You had a punt return for a touchdown, and then the next punt was blocked and put Seattle on the 11-yard line. They scored in two plays. If the Bills score 35, I'm going to need them to cover. Okay? But also, if the Bills score 35, they're going to need to be super locked in. This is a sleepy spot for Buffalo. I'm liking under Bills Saints. Lions Browns. So this is such a funny spot to me. Going into, you know, I on Sunday night just do a list, what are the games, and then try and without seeing the spreads, what do I think they're going to be? Maybe what do I want them to be? All different things, right? And I was like, "Man, if Baltimore can blow out Detroit, can we get the Lions at -7 against the Browns? That's going to be really good." And then the Lions beat up on the Ravens, and this number went up to like 10. I think maybe even at one point like flipped to a 10.5. Like this is a double-digit number now. And it almost made me get to Cleveland, right? Because now we're a field goal above where I was looking to bet the Lions. It's like I got to play the number. And then I kind of realized something. If the Browns are going to hang in this spot, it is not going to be good enough to just be like, hey, Myles Garrett, can you save us? The final score of this game is not going to be 17-13 Lions win, Browns cover. I actually think it could be more shootout. Maybe I'm better off playing over. I know Joe Flacco is bad. I know he's been bad. But I think Joe Flacco still has a couple games left in him. Like week one, where he threw for 290, right? So 290 passing yards. I'm looking at Flacco's yards. I'm looking at Flacco's longest completion. I saw the yards around like 210.5. I think that should be good to go. But the long completion of 31.5, he hasn't hit yet this year. That's not Flacco. Flacco, you look last year in those starts for, you know, the Colts, almost always going over it. He went over that number in literally, he had a 40-yard completion in every single start that year for the Browns where he went to the playoffs, five regular seasons, and then the playoff game, so six total. He had a 40-yard completion in all of those. The Lions have given up a completion of 34-plus, I think 35-plus maybe even, but definitely 34-plus in all three games. So I'm looking for Flacco props heading into Lions-Browns. Pats-Panthers is just a nuts game. Like, I wanted to fade Carolina off of that game. Mike Vrabel cannot go 0-3 at home to start his Pats tenure with those games being against the Steelers, Raiders, and Panthers. But I'm not paying a Patriots premium. I'll let other people do that. I'm just not doing it. Trevion Henderson maybe gets unleashed this week. We'll see. Not a game for me. Texans, Titans. This is going to be an interesting teaser spot because but also a potential survivor spot. As I grab a sip of water. Because the Houston defense is just as good as everyone thought it was going to be. It's just the offense is even worse than I thought it would be, and I didn't think it was going to be very good. Cam Ward was limited, though, in practice, so if he's going to have some mobility issues, this could just be target practice for Will Anderson and Danielle Hunter. Nico Collins and Derek Stingley were on the injury report, though, so that's obviously not super helpful for the Texans. Not a game I'm going to get in the mix with, but I may end up with the Texans in Survivor. I know, division, they stink, I shouldn't, but it's a spot that I'm going to, it's a spot that I'm going to take a look at. Giants, Chargers, I got to bet the Giants here, I think. 6.5, whenever I see a 6.5, I just stare at the board for hours wondering, can I get 7? Can I get 7? Can I get 7? And this is one of those, I'll just tell you, okay, like Malik Nabers missed the practice, I fully expect him to play, but like, you can't bet this, if Malik Nabers doesn't play, you might get 7.5. So that's what I'm talking about like just wanting to time this right. But so I, as somebody who laid 5.5 with Kansas City last Sunday night, are the books fully ready to say the Chargers are better than the Chiefs? I think that's interesting. I think that is. I thought the Chargers were better than the Chiefs coming into the year. You guys know that. I bet the Chargers to win the AFC West. But again, are the books ready to say that? And even if we go, okay, you know what, they're even, or Chargers are a bit better, right? They're a point better, okay, because that's what we're seeing. I think Jackson Dart is a quarterback upgrade. Russell Wilson had, you know, that magic moment of throwing for 450, and that to me was all signals go on laying 5. I laid points with the Chiefs on the road. Like, that's not really who I am. You know, that team is kind of allergic to covering, but not in that spot, not against Russ when he was due for such a stinker and it was clear as day. And if he would have played in this game, Russ, he would have been bad again. He really would have. I think Jackson Dart brings juice. I think Cam Scadaboo brings juice. I think Malik Nabers does as well. I'll say Nabers props jump out. Sutton had over 100 last week. Hollywood Brown, who ended up the number one in that game, finished with 99. Jacoby Myers finished like tick under 70. So I think it was like 6 for 68. So Nabers props look clean. I'm probably going to end up on the Giants here. And what I can do as well, you know, if you're listening to this, like I can confirm the sides on Twitter, but I'm telling you right now, they really jump out, the Giants, to me in this spot. Let's keep moving through this slate here. Colts-Rams. If it was 3, I'd likely lay it with LA. The thing is, I don't really love either of these teams. Like, the Rams got embarrassed against the Eagles. And you might think, what? No, like, for the Rams to put as much stock into that game as they clearly did, an emotional, we got to have this game as they clearly did, to get up and blow it is a gut punch. And maybe they make a statement at the expense of the Colts, but I think the Colts are, like, this is the Colts statement spot, right? This is where they prove, like, hey, we're a team here. I lean under in the game. I lean under in Rams. I'm not involved with this one at 3.5. I think my favorite side of the week is going to be this next one. Niners-Jags. I like Jacksonville at 3.5. The Niners are 3-0. They have won those football games by 4, 5, and 1. Now, give them credit because they're doing that with backup quarterback play, all these injuries, and it's impressive. The injuries just keep getting worse. It just keeps getting worse. Mac Jones is added to the injury report. Ricky Pearsall is added to the injury report. Still can't figure out if Brock's going to play. By the way, if he does, and this goes up to like 4.5, give me the Jags again. I'll take it at 3.5 with Brock. I'm worried about this being Mac Jones and getting to 2.5, which is probably more so where it should be. I mean that, okay? Juwan Jennings, we still don't know if he's going to play. You know what we do know? Nick Bosa's out. My pick to win Defensive Player of the Year, one of the best edge rushers in football. And eventually, as the season goes on, I think Robert Saleh will be able to steady this group. But my goodness, to lose Nick Bosa is a lot. That is tough. And this team narrowly lost last week to the Cardinals. I don't think this number would be this if it played out this way. Trevor Lawrence has thrown an interception now in every game to start this season. He's never thrown an interception in 4 straight games. So I think Trevor plays clean football. I think the Jags take a little bit of momentum of that big, big Brian Thomas catch at the end of the game. I think the Jags are super live here. I think it's a statement spot for Jacksonville. That defense has been better than even I expected. I think Trevor plays clean football. I think Brian Thomas Jr. gets going here. And I think it's a Jaguars spot on the road in the Bay, catching 3.5 points. Chiefs-Ravens, it's funny, man. I thought I was going to be on KC at +3. I saw that those were out there, and we could have had those before Monday night. In some way, I'm glad I didn't. I did not want to back Kansas City if that meant, oh, the Ravens are going to fall to 1-3. I don't want to bet the side here. I don't want to bet this narrative total like, oh, the Ravens defense is going to be bad forever. I found maybe my best prop look of the slate. Lamar Jackson over 45.5 rushing. Like, this is one I know I'm going to be betting. Lamar Jackson, now, he's played this team 6 times. His rookie year, where nobody really knew like how it was going to be, and Spags wasn't there, but he had 14 carries for 67 yards on a long of 21, okay? Then MVP season, first time going up against Spagnuolo, goes 8 for 46 on the ground. 2020, he goes 9 for 83 on the ground, long run of 30. Then he goes, and the one time he actually beat the Chiefs, 16 for 107, chipped in 2 rushing touchdowns, long of 21 yards in 2021. The AFC title game, he went 8 for 54, had a long of 21, and then last year, week 1, 16 for 122, and a long of 16. Lamar Jackson has got to get mobile out there. Lamar last week was a big part of the reason that their offense messed some stuff up, and I know the numbers won't say that. Those sacks, almost all of them were on him. He was holding the ball forever. And Lamar's escapability gives him that chance to find things downfield. I think Lamar is going to, instead of like 1,000, 2,000, 1,000, 6,000, 12, 1,000, I'm Lamar, I can do whatever I want. Maybe it's like 3,000, 1,000. Okay, never mind. Here's a 15-yard run. I really like Lamar over the 45.5 rush yards. Okay, I think that's a really good spot. Raiders-Bears. Raiders-Bears is a prop game. I want to see the Brock Bowers numbers. They're not out. Michael Mayer has a concussion. He may not play. Bowers, maybe another week healthier. We saw Jake the Snake Ferguson get busy against Chicago. I know that was some garbage time, but Bowers is due for a big one, I think. But I'm also interested in Genty. RBs have been eaten against Chicago. At some point, Genty is going to not get touched at the line of scrimmage and actually take 140 yards. And that alone will make up for him getting touched behind the line of scrimmage on the other 19 carries. I'm interested in Genty. I'm interested in Bowers. But I want to see where all of those numbers land. Last game, and then I'm going to do the Eagles-Bucks in the finale. Cowboys-Packers. There's just no way I don't bet Dallas +7. Like, I don't, like, to some degree, I don't know why I haven't bet it yet. I wonder if it's in part because I'm like, oh, like, maybe they'll give, like, a, you know, because I want to add my profit boost stuff to it. And I just want to see what they're going to be. Like, maybe they're going to give us straight wagers for this game. Maybe there's a sick part of me that thinks it can go to 7.5 with the way people are talking. You give me Dak. So last week on Pro Football Today, Cleveland and Green Bay, that line went down to 7 at one book, and I laid it with the Packers, and I was happy to. And I don't care what anybody, like, I'm fine with that play. If Jordan Love doesn't, you know, throw that interception, our worst case is a push. Like, I'm not saying the Packers were the right side, but I make plenty of bad mistakes. Like, let me pull up last week's slate just so I can remember. Let me see some of my other sides. Like, I took the Titans. Like, they got destroyed. right? Like, that was, you know what I mean? Like, okay, that was a bad job out of me, and I'll live with that. You know what, right? I'll live with, I guess, any of it, really. But, like, Green Bay, like, this might sound, like, I would make that bet again, if that makes any sense. But here's all I'm saying. CeeDee Lamb's out, cool. You cannot book the Cowboys the same as the Browns. You can't. And I know it's like all narrows, like, oh, Parsons is going to go out there. He's going to have a party. Like, you got to understand, this game means a lot to Micah. If you had a power rank, who this game means the most to, number one is Micah and Dak are probably tied for first. And then the next, like, 15 guys are all Dallas Cowboys. Sunday night in their building off of not just a loss, but, like, getting destroyed by the Chicago Bears. This is a Dallas spot here. I know CeeDee's out. But if CeeDee was in, we probably don't get the 7. So we get the 7 with Dallas. All right, we'll close this out with Eagles-Bucks. I cannot wait for this game. I will be there, which is awesome. Two teams that are 3-0. Two threats to the number one seed in the NFC. And for Tampa Bay, you know, and for both of them, people are talking like, oh, they're lucky. They're winning close. Point differential. And there's truth in both of those things. But on the Tampa side, they're one of the most injured teams in football. Chris Godwin hasn't played yet. Tristan Wirfs hasn't played yet. They're losing offensive linemen on a regular basis. Mike Evans couldn't finish the football game. Well, just being 3-0 with those level of injuries is all you can ask for. You take a look at how terrible their division is. Tampa Bay is absolutely winning it. So for the Bucs, it's now about playing their best football come December, January. That's what it's about. And they've given themselves that breathing room by being 3-0. The playoffs don't start tomorrow. So again, people are like, ah, you know, it's a little lucky, a little fraudulent. Sure, keep your eye on it, right? But also, it's not that fraudulent because Baker Mayfield, I've talked about this, Baker Mayfield felt, you know, near MVP level last year, at least statistically. He's felt near MVP level this year. And Baker is the lifeblood of this Bucs team. They lose Dave Canales. They lose Liam Cohen. They keep Baker Mayfield. And they just keep on rolling. On the Philly side of it, you hear some similar stuff. Ah, Dallas by 4, KC by 3. Would have only been won by the Rams. Block field goals. For Philadelphia, the defending Super Bowl champions, to be 3-0 when everybody talked about the schedule, again, you can't ask for much more than that. But there's something that has really bothered me with the Eagles conversations. Everybody was like, man, when's Jalen Hurts going to throw it? And then Jalen Hurts went out there and was unbelievable. Maybe the best half of football any quarterback has played this season outside of Josh's, I mean, it was really one quarter, but Josh's second half against Baltimore in week one on Sunday night was Jalen Hurts' second half against the Rams here. And people instead made the talking point of like, they're winning weird, they're still false starting, why are games close? Like, what? Like, all you asked for was let's see Hurts cook. They win the second half 26-7 to the LA Rams. Well, now let's see how it looks here. Like, again, if the Eagles offense goes back to weird stuck in the mud, then we'll revisit that conversation. But the last thing you just saw was this football team look exactly how people want them to look. And people keep making the Chiefs comparisons. Ready for one of my favorite little nuggets I went out and found? Jalen Hurts in week number one had a QBR of 87.5. And in week three had a passer rating of 117.4. Now you might say, why is that relevant, right? We're comparing this year's Eagles to last year's Chiefs. So I just told you week number one, QBR 87.5, passer rating above a 117. You can pick whichever metric you want, but it's to show you that we have two games that you could argue were great. Patrick Mahomes, okay, did not have a game with a passer rating above 115 until the Chiefs' eighth game of the season last year. He didn't have a game with a QBR above 80. Not until the seventh game of the season. Like, if you want to get wild, He didn't have a game with a QBR above 85. Ready? 15th game of the year. 15th. Didn't have a passer rating game of above the 117 that Jalen put up until they went to Carolina, worst defense in football, 11th game of the year. It was November. And that's Mahomes. Again, the standard, like, we hold Jalen Hurts to a higher standard than Mahomes. Like, this is the stuff that was driving me crazy last year. We're like, oh, it's the same. It's not the same. The Chiefs put out 2 months of what's going on here, football, after the whole last regular season was weird. The Eagles basically had 2.5 games of, I guess, what's going on here. And then a half of brilliance. And the talking point, instead of like, that's more like it, that's what I want to see, Hurts is in the MVP conversation, AJ Brown's a dog, looks like they found something, the conversation is, I don't know, man, can they keep winning like this? What are you talking about? Do you think the Eagles plan to get down 14, 20 points in game? Like, what are we talking about here, man? These conversations, a lot of them are bad. A lot of them are missing the mark. But there's going to be a lot of conversations of this one all out of Tampa Bay, Philly. Listen, let's be clear. Biggest game of the week is the Chiefs and the Ravens, because one of those teams is guaranteed to be 1-3. Then we're going to talk a lot about Dallas and Green Bay. If Dallas pulls off the upset, Green Bay is 2-2, just like Dallas. It's free fall. It's what's going on, right? If it ends up a Green Bay win, you know, it's like, okay, fine. If it ends up a Green Bay rout, it's like Jerry should be embarrassed. And then you've got this one right here between two 3-0 teams in Tampa Bay and Philadelphia. The only game that features two teams that are 3-0. And you could make a case that the winner should be the NFC favorite. You could make the case. Philly actually is the NFC favorite. Tampa Bay is hidden down there somewhere behind Tampa Bay and Minnesota. They're actually behind Washington. I called them Tampa Bay. They're behind Washington, which is crazy. So I am very, very excited for this football game. I'm going to look for Saquon Barkley rushing props, as Saquon is off to his tough start this year. And at some point, even if like the down-to-down stuff isn't great, the 40-yard run has to be coming. Similar for Bucky Irving. Bucky Irving's not been super explosive this year. Again, if the down-to-down stuff's not great, I think eventually you see some explosiveness. I'll look to bet those backs. The other thing I'm looking at, and I will probably end up playing, is Bucks plus 3.5. Most unbiased man in history of sports media. Also a great fiance and soon-to-be husband. But truly, this number's out of whack. This is the number that the Eagles laid last week to the Rams at home. They're now in Tampa Bay, and people are going to go, Bucks injuries, Bucks injuries. Tristan Wirfs and Chris Godwin look like they're coming back. Outside of Baker Mayfield, Tristan Wirfs, I think, is the most important football player on this team. The three most important players on the Bucks are Baker Mayfield. This is no disrespect. Baker Mayfield, Tristan Wirfs, Antoine Winfield. Mike Evans, though. You guys know Mike Evans, top 10 wide receiver, future Hall of Famer, all that. Right? But this is a loaded wide receiver room. It's how they're able to keep their heads above water. And Godwin is on his way back. Getting 3.5 year with Tampa Bay, all they do is play close games, who somehow like own the Eagles. Look, if the Eagles step up, route roll, they're throwing the football, everything, and it's great. They're flying high. They're up 27-10 at the break. I would be a little bit surprised by that, but truly, if that happens, I know it's not like 10.5 points, it's 3.5, but like the Bucks are never dead to me. They're just not. At home, 3.5, that's going to be a side that I'm looking at here. So a little re-rack just of what we're looking at in the NFL. Probably Dallas plus 7, definitely Jags plus 3.5. Giants plus 6.5 most likely. Looking at that under in Bills Saints at 48.5. Some Flacco props, Lamar rushing, some Saquon and Bucky props, and then the Bucks +3.5. Of course, it's Go Birds, but it's going to be a great one out there in Tampa Bay. I'll be live and in person. I appreciate everybody getting in the mix with us ahead of this monster weekend of everything, right? College football, pro football, little Ryder Cup, Team USA, the finale of the baseball season. Can't wait to watch it all play out. We'll talk about it all next week right back here on the Kevin Walsh Show. I'm Kevin Walsh, of course, man. It's a Sports Grid podcast. Rate, review, subscribe, all that good stuff. We'll see you next time.